Big questions about the future of BP as the company's shareholders meet in London.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Less than a week before the one-year anniversary of the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, disgruntled BP shareholders are meeting this morning in London for the company's annual get-together. But the focus of the meeting isn't so much the spill, it's Russia, where the company was hoping to make a lot of money down the road. The BBC's Rob Young is outside the shareholder meeting in London, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, first of all, explain what's going on behind you. There's some protesting happening.
Indeed, there is. There are dozens and dozens of protesters from all over the world who've made the journey here to London, including some people from the US Gulf Coast. They've come here to ask some pretty tough questions of BP's management, particularly in relation to compensation and also the continuing impact on the environment of last year's Gulf spill in the Gulf.
And I gather that the big story of the meeting over there has to do with this big Russian oil deal. Tell us about that.
It does. Thursday was supposed to be the deadline for BP and Russia's Rosneft to finally agree to go ahead with a massive $16 billion deal to access potentially vast reserves of oil and gas in the Russian Arctic. And that could be very lucrative for BP. But the deal is at risk of collapsing because of objections from BP's partners in another Russian venture. The deal should have reduced BP's reliance on oil from the United States. But this deadline has now been extended by another month. But shareholders here aren't happy. Indeed, one person has described BP's handling of the whole affair as a complete shambles.
The BBC's Rob Young in London outside the BP shareholder meeting. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, when the opening bell rings at the NASDAQ in New York this morning, the CEO of Zipcar will be standing behind the podium. That's because today, Zipcar is going public. The decade-old company, which allows you to rent a car by the hour, is a big hit in big cities. Its membership has grown to more than 500,000. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
Zipcar has ironic ads, cool cars, and a growing customer base. It even bought a competitor in London. But there's one thing Zipcar doesn't have. Profits.
Yes, after 10 years, I would think they should have shown a profit.
Michael Millman's a rental car analyst and isn't convinced Zipcar will succeed. But Kathy Smith's more optimistic. She researches new IPOs at Renaissance Capital.
The company is making money in the early markets that it has started.
If you break it down, the company's turning a profit in Boston, New York, and Washington, D.C. And Smith says Zipcar's plowing that cash into new markets.
So the reason it's not making money is it's expanding very quickly.
Smith thinks Zipcar could spark a new multi-billion-dollar industry. But even she expects bumps in the road. In Silicon Valley, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Global stocks are down this morning, about 1% lower in London right now. We'll get quarterly results from Google today. Investors are waiting for the first extensive remarks from the company's new CEO, Google co-founder Larry Page. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow inched up 7 points to close at 12,270.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, managing over $1.7 trillion in assets, providing investment solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Manta.com, providing an online destination for small businesses to be found and to find new customers. More online at Manta.com. Marketplace Innovations Desk is supported by Jaguar. You can experience the 2011 Jaguar XJ at a local dealer or visit JaguarUSA.com.
There's a big meeting about meat going on in Chicago today. It's the International Meat, Poultry, and Seafood Convention, and the story so far is that consumers are buying more meat now that the recovery is underway. But the return of carnivorousness is putting pressure on food and water supplies, and that's leading some to the new and improved world of fake meat. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Adrian Hill reports.
Chicken can be tasty.
I love it.
Just ask Harold Huff, a researcher at the University of Missouri.
Flavor, feel, versatility. You know, it's great in casseroles.
The problem is, to make that chicken casserole, well, you've got to have a live chicken. And that chicken needs water and grain to eat and a place to live, and it'll have to be killed. Or maybe you don't. In a laboratory at the University of Missouri, a food extruder spits out long, thick ribbons of fake chicken. It's made from a dry soy powder.
From dry feed in to product out, once it's up, running, and stable, can vary as little as 15 seconds.
A whole lot faster than growing a real chicken. Huff and Dr. Fu Hung She have been working on making passable fake chicken for a decade and a half.
If it doesn't feel right when the person chews it, if it doesn't look right on the plate, people are turned off by that.
And so Huff and She had to figure out how to make their soy chicken not just taste like chicken, but have the texture of real chicken and look like chicken instead of a big gray blob. So they extruded and extruded and extruded until they came up with a better analog chicken strip. Now, more than 15 years later...
Okay, another bowl, some sort.
Ethan Brown is cooking the mock chicken strips up with some tomatoes, onions, and spices to make fajitas. He and his company have partnered with the university to get Dr. Shea's chicken to market. Brown thinks the demand for better fake meat is there, driven by health concerns, worries about how mass-farmed animals are treated, and the environment.
Climate change is a big issue. We had talked about, the UN came out with a study saying 18% of greenhouse gas emissions are due to livestock.
Greenhouse gases are responsible for rising global temperatures. Brown serves up his fake chicken fajitas that taste a whole lot like real chicken fajitas. Appetizing? Your call. But it points to a future with a whole lot less clucking. I'm Adrienne Hill for Marketplace.
And if you want to see fake chicken, we've got a video up at marketplace.org. Finally, from fake chicken to real chicken and onions and tomatoes and bacon and cheese and two hamburger patties, those are the ingredients of the new meat monster from Burger King. It is certainly a calorie monster, packing more than 1,100 of them. It contains more salt than four bags of potato chips. It costs about $10. Thankfully, for our waistlines, however, it is only available in Japan. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The collective hope in Japan is that destruction could lead to rebirth in every possible way.
Change, chaos, crisis often precedes huge leaps of entrepreneurship and innovation.
I'm Tess Vigeland, rebuilding and rethinking recovery, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.